Hey, welcome back to the Ramble Room. Today's a very special edition. We are delighted to have David Iverson from Cowboy State Politics with us beneath the beautiful Bighorn Mountains in Buffalo, Wyoming, as he's fond of saying. And there are some other guests here. I'm going to let David run away with it.
Thank you, Ken. We're joined today by Representative John Baer from Campbell County, Representative Mark Jennings from Sheridan County, and all the way from Weston County, Representative Chip Nyman. Welcome, gentlemen.
Crook County.
Well, I've been saying it wrong then.
Now, the name of that county, did they change that after you were represented, or was that before your time?
That was long before my time.
Okay, yeah, just clarifying. Thank you.
We're named after a cavalry officer that
went
through the country on the Custer Expedition, yeah.
It wasn't after Butch Cassidy?
No.
His name was George.
No, Sundance Kid, all that. Yep, that's all from my part of the country.
So we've invited these representatives here to talk about Medicaid expansion. And the Democrats all across the state have been seeking out every media source that they could possibly find to talk about how fantastic Medicaid expansion is. So we invited representatives from all across Northeast Wyoming to tell them why they're wrong. So what we'd like to do first, guys, is just let you introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about you and the district that you represent, and then we'll get into the topic of Medicaid expansion. And we'll start off with Representative Baer.
Well, thank you for having me. This is a great opportunity. I've enjoyed the Ramble Room and the repertoire that goes on here, so it's nice to be able to be a part of it today. And I represent the eastern half of the city of Gillette. That's District 31. I'm a freshman, so just started this last year, and have just really enjoyed it. I enjoy the debate, enjoy the opportunity to protect conservative values in the House, and intend to continue doing that. Enjoy the company of these gentlemen, too, down there. It's been a real joy working with them.
Excellent. Mark?
Well, House District 30, the eastern part of Sheridan, to the south in the county, and then about 600 square miles going east. This is my fourth term. I have really enjoyed it. I'm glad to be here today. Glad to have you guys invite us. And both of these guys are freshmen, and I got to tell you, it's really, really good to have some more conservative thinking people.
Amen.
Amen to that. How about you, Representative Nyman?
Representative Chip Nyman, House District 1, number one in the state, number one in our hearts. Couldn't help but say that after hearing that on the House floor all the time.
Crook.
Also a freshman, first term in office. Haven't had any political career before this. Ranched all of my life, been in agriculture, owned businesses, retail outlets, and primarily been involved in the agriculture all of my life. Really had a wonderful opportunity to get to know some very smart people and to be around some extremely good people down there in the legislature, and I really respect these two gentlemen here that I get the opportunity to serve with, and Mark and John, and look forward to some wonderful opportunities for the state of Wyoming down the road. And I want to thank both you and Dave, Ken, for giving us the opportunity to be able to sit down and visit and kind of go over some of these things that we're presented with, and hopefully we can maybe shed some light on some things that we see from our perspective. So,
yeah, great.
Well, I think a good place to start would be just for us to get your general opinion of this whole Medicaid expansion bill. And yeah, thumbs down, definitely. So let's start with you, Representative Nyman. Just let's just go around the table and just tell us your thoughts on that bill.
I think the biggest thing for me is when you look at government and expansion of government, and when you look at Medicaid expansion in the state of Wyoming, I don't know if you can say it any better than what was said on the floor by Representative Chris Knapp. He said, don't ever take anything from the government that you don't plan on paying 100% for yourself. Right from the beginning. If you're not planning on paying for all of it on your own, then don't take it from the government. And I think that's a lot of where we're at, and I think where we're at financially in the state of Wyoming with the uncertainty that we see on our horizon. I mean, as positive and as optimistic as we want to be, I think we have a responsibility to our taxpayers and to our constituents to be realistic about what we're dealing with and the potential problems that we face, and I think we need to live within our means. And I think that Medicaid expansion is is not good for Wyoming. I think it is just room for abuse. I think we serve a real opportunity here for a problem in the state. And, you know, when you got the nation, the national scene trying to sweeten the pot by saying we'll pay 90% and you only have to come up with 10%. To me, that is a carrot, you know, being dangled in front of a state saying, hey, if we can just get you to sign on, you know, and get you going, it's like anything else. It's just so hard. You know, it was interesting to me as I sat on the floor and I listened to some of the discourse on this, is that, you know, if the state or at the national level would ever back out and say they're going to go away from that 90%, then we as a state can back out. We'll just write it right into the legislation that we don't have to continue to abide by this and we can quit. Well, the thought immediately went through my mind is human beings by nature. How many times when you start getting something and then suddenly somebody can just say, hey, we're just not going to do that anymore because the other guy backed out. So now we're going to back out too, and we're just going to do away with this program. I don't know of a program I've ever seen where you start giving something like that away that they don't expect to continue to get it. And so I think it's just a way of getting the camel's nose under the tent. And when we let the camel completely in the tent, then we're going to be responsible to deal with that camel. And I don't think that that is something that we as a state right now are in a position to be able to handle. I think that that is something that we need to avoid. And I think we need to be honest with the people and have a realistic viewpoint of this, because we can't pay for it. We simply don't have the money. And I don't mean to be a little dark rain cloud, but I'm also want to be realistic and about the approach we're at, because if we're cutting spending, we cut $430 million from the state budget this year. And yet somebody can honestly look at me and say, hey, you know what? Medicaid expansion, that's where we need to be headed, and we need to provide those opportunities. Well, I don't think right now is the time. I think we need to be very, very objective about how we look at this, and I don't see this as the opportunity to do that right now, especially when they're trying that desperately to get us to sign on to it. There's something wrong there. It's a little too good to be true. I've always told to avoid those kind of opportunities. So
I'm not sure if I should take offense at the camel comment from Campbell County.
We've got plenty more Campbell County jokes where those came from, John.
I was just sitting here wondering when the next stimulus check comes out.
Well, that'll fix it all. Yeah. I'm just waiting for the next check.
A couple more guns I couldn't buy with the last one.
That's right. How about you, Representative Jennings?
Well, I've seen this bill I don't even know how many times in 7 years. And for me, it's a philosophical thing. I talked to a constituent probably towards the very end of session, and she told me the story about probably 10 years ago, I don't know, before Obamacare, how her and her husband were both well insured for $500 a month. She said, today we can't. She said, through this thing, we make just enough money that it kicks us into this bracket, and it's like $1,500 a person, $1,200 to $1,500 a month per person. So, you know, when you go all the way back to this philosophical thing, there are our U.S. Constitution does not have any place for social spending, and there's a reason for that. I mean, our founders they understood benevolence, dictatorships, and the government that was doing things like that, and they chose not to go down that road. There's a wonderful book out there called The Problem with Compassionate Giving or something along those lines, and this isn't the first time we've been down this road historically, and anything that government's big enough to give you, they're also big enough to take from you.
That's right.
And so the strings that are attached to this, you know, once you're in, you're not getting out. I don't care if they write it in the legislation. You're not going to be able to. I mean, there's 38 states that have now signed on, and none of them have been able to get out. And so I've just been opposed to this all the way along. Philosophically, I think it's the wrong way. Self-reliance, responsibility, words that this country was founded on, we have set aside, and we do that for an entitlement mentality. And there are places to help. We all want to help our fellow man and woman, and when we turn those things over to the government, we lose a part of our own soul. So I guess that's kind of where I'm at.
Well, I don't think I could agree with you any more than I already do. I mean, that's, well, and both what you and Representative Nyman said, you know, once you take something for quote unquote free, I mean, there are always strings attached to it, and you're never going to get out of it. What are your thoughts, Representative Bear?
I'd just like to take those words about benevolent giving, and you know, he was talking about the government and benevolent giving in the same sentence, and that's pretty crafty to be able to do that. You know, is it really benevolent giving when it comes from the government, when they take it from someone to give it to you, and basically at gunpoint? You know, yeah. We have no choice as to whether or not we're going to pay our taxes and submit to the government whatever they have determined that we have to provide. So, and there's an opportunity cost. And the big opportunity cost that I see in this particular program is our society is going to become more and more dependent on the government. As government grows, we make more dependence. And we've done that with the welfare state already. This is just an expansion of the welfare state. And as an employer, I shudder the day that I can't find anybody to work for me, because it's easier for them to go get free health care than to put in the hours necessary to make a good living. And I know what making a good living does to the human soul.
It does.
It's just like the giving that Mark just spoke about. Yeah. There's nothing better than working a hard day's work and earning your living and then having enough left over to give to others. Yeah. Those
Absolutely.
Are the things that we were made for.
And I don't mean to interject
here
on the top of it, but I tell you, it makes me think of something that it was a story that was told to me as a child, where in years ago during the Depression, there was not enough money to go around to pay for projects. And what they had was, the story as it was told to me, is there was a man that was looking for a job. And he came upon a crew of men that were digging a ditch. And he got to the end of the ditch, and there was a shovel that was laying on the edge of the ditch. And he grabbed the shovel and jumped in the ditch and started digging. And the foreman came by checking his men and got to the end. And he says, "Who are you?" And he says, "Well, I'm looking for a job." And he said, "I just thought, well, the shovel was here and I grabbed it and I went to digging." And the guy says, "Get out of the ditch." He said, "I don't have money for you." He said, "I only have enough money to pay these men that are in the ditch." And the guy looked at him, as I was told, and he says, "Sir," he says, "you don't have to pay me." He says, "But please let me work." He said, "I have no value." He said, "If I can't, at least work." And that mindset has been so completely lost in society today. I would much rather you send me a check and I do nothing for it. Where we come from a generation of people that work brought them value. It made them useful. It meant that they were productive and that they were giving back and that they were creating and that they were doing something. That was a completely different mindset in that time. You know, and those are the stories that I think about when I'm on the floor, you know, when we're sitting here trying to figure out ways of paying people not to work or help and subsidize what you're doing or whatever. We just continue, as John just said, you know, we just continue to exacerbate this idea that we're going to pay you. Everybody gets a ribbon.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter if you try or nothing. Everybody gets a ribbon. And as a country, we can't support that. And that's, we've lost that mindset and that work ethic and that desire to get out. I don't care what it is. I've got people, and growing up, and my parents went through the Depression. And
What's that say about him?
Yeah, that's, I'm old. I'm old. All what hair hasn't fell out is turning gray. But it's
easy.
They've got this idea, you know, that even if
that
it meant picking up pop cans,
I know.
Even if it means picking up pop cans to sell aluminum, I'll do it to keep from being on a government check.
One of my partners wrote a paper called "The Benefits of Work," and just as you were speaking, I was thinking about what he wrote. I'll try to make a copy of that available to you guys because it's excellent. But it's also worth doing a show on sometime. So watch, you know, I keep making notes here.
I tend to think, when I look back at our founding fathers and what great statesmen they were, and how it's so hard to find statesmen today, but one of the things that I see in each one of them is a common thread of understanding human nature. And if you start with a good understanding of human nature, it's a lot easier to create smaller government, more liberty, more opportunity. And that's what's made America great, is that understanding of human nature. And we've gotten away from that. I was at a meeting this morning where a particular legislator was saying that we needed the Medicaid expansion. And the argument was that there's just poor people out there that are really suffering. But I just finished saying that there's no one in the state that is going without the necessary care to keep them both alive and healthy.
The fundamental difference, I'm convinced, between conservative and liberal is their worldview and their position on the basic errancy of humans. The liberals seem to think that man of this heart is basically good and will always do the right thing. And the Christian conservative idea understands the truth of the matter that every imagination of a man's heart is only evil continually. Mm-hmm. And the more power you give him, the worse it's going
to
get.
Well, and I think the whole thing boils down to a fundamental misunderstanding of what our country was built on. I mean, John spoke about, or Representative Bear spoke about, the founders' conception of how the country should be made or created. And the founders believed in equality of opportunity, and that is that everybody has an equal opportunity to make a good life for themselves and to work hard and make money and then raise a family. But on the other side of it, we have the progressive liberal Democrat idea that we should all have equality, period. That we should be
equality of outcome.
Equality of outcome, mm-hmm. Exactly. And that the only way that you can create that is by giving people free stuff. And of course, when somebody gets something for free,
there's not much value in it.
Mm-hmm. There we go.
Well, it's more than just not much value. Government doesn't create wealth. They have to take it from someone else.
That's right. They redistribute it.
It's like the idea of the perpetual motion machine. Everybody's got the idea, if I could just build a machine and get it started, I could draw energy from it from ever. It's not physically possible. We wanted to play a couple of clips for you. Danielle Arnault, I'm sure most of you know her position within the Democratic Party. She was on Public Pulse the other day, and I'm going to play you three little sound clips real quick. And then we're going to ask your reaction. And after we're finished with that, I'm going to play you one more sound clip and get your reaction to that. First one.
It's going to be so great for so many families and children. Most of the people that will be covered with Medicaid expansion are going to be elderly and children.
The incentive is for 2 years. That doesn't mean it won't get extended. It could possibly get extended. But right now, there's 2 years of free, not just free health care for our state to expand, but actually increases in revenues based on the money that would come in from this program.
Right, and this will help support those. I do believe it was a hospital administrator who said, all right, well, yeah, Medicaid is only going to pay X amount, but X amount is still more than nothing.
Correct.
Isn't it?
We're paying for it anyway with uncompensated care.
Well, I hope that, like me, you're anxious to hear how these representatives respond to the sound clips you just heard. But in order to do that, you're going to have to tune in to the next episode, which you'll find shortly.